Congressman John Tsimkas from Washington, D.C., on the line with us this morning. First off, John, good to talk to you again.
Yeah, it's great to be with you. It brightens my day after a week like this. Holy cow.
Right, and that State of that Union address, that was the epicenter of the week.
Well, yeah, so believe it or not, my wife had never been to a State of the Union address, so 24 years, I thought it was about time I got her to come to visit one, and boy, what a doozy that she saw.
Yeah.
I'm glad she came out to be able to at least share kind of the day with me, and we move on from there.
All right, so you said a doozy. Just a sidebar, has any president ever had somebody give the Medal of Freedom during a State of the Union address and have it put on by the First Lady? Is that truly a unique?
So, yeah, it's very unique. Hey, listen, I even questioned having it, the State of the Union, as a televised production anymore. And I've been thinking about this for many years because it is like a made-for-TV and a soap opera almost. You know, State of the Union constitutionally doesn't have to be an address. In fact, it historically was a written report sent by the executive branch, and it was, I believe, read by the clerk, just read by the clerk into the record. Wilson started this current process of being televised. I think the historical reason was to unite the country. I'm not sure they do much uniting of the country anymore. And with media and showmanship, you know, no one's a better user of media for good or for ill as the president. So I think that two things that was unique was the presenting of the medal during the address. The soldier coming home from Afghanistan to surprise his family, that too was that stuff never happens. You always have people you point to, but these were made for TV moments. Again, for great events, but of course they're also for if you're a liberal, they don't really care much for Rush Limbaugh. So
right, it's so posturing
as much as presenting him, and he's obviously a great historical person in your line of work, and you can't doubt his success. But it's like poking them in the eye. So.
All right, so here's the thing. You talked about a soap opera type of mentality for the presentation on TV. And when you said that, the first thing I thought of was the obvious confusion by the Democratic Party as to should they stand up, should they clap, should they scorn, should they throw rocks.
Right.
And you saw a variety of responses, and then, of course, the glaring at one another that's going on, and whether Jerry Nadler actually stood up, no small feat in and of itself physically, but emotionally, another issue altogether, that he actually stood up on at least one occasion that I saw on the cameras. That aspect topped off by the cherry on the sundae, that was Nancy Pelosi ripping up the State of the Union address behind the president, and of course her constant seemingly confusion and vast array of facial expressions.
Yeah, it is very childish. It was not becoming elected officials in positions of authority. That doesn't give a great example to our young men and women, whether they're high school, college, university level, military. Yet, I mean, there is bad blood between those two. And, yeah, you would think that, I told one of the reporters out here, really, to be successful in this line of work, you've got to have your enemy today is your enemy today, but you have to pivot, because based on the issue, they could be your ally tomorrow. And if there is so much hatred because of the battle you're currently in, you can't transition to where you can work together. Between the speaker and the president, the enemy today is the enemy tomorrow.
Right.
And the enemy in perpetuity.
Yes.
And that really shows, with all due respect to these folks who are in senior elected officials, it really shows it really shows immaturity.
You know, it's interesting. Jacqueline Kennedy wrote in her book that she asked Jack, how do you do it every day? And his response as President of the United States to his wife was, I never let anything get so bad on one given day that I'm not willing to talk to that person the next day.
And that's exactly right. And, the Speaker and the President, I don't think have personally talked for 4 months.
Oh, so, I wouldn't doubt it.
So that's, this is just the way it is. Now, that the President, I think there's some righteous indignation and anger. I think most people view the last 6 months as a wasted opportunity based upon a plan that was hatched, as he got sworn in for office,
right,
to remove him. So I can understand I talked to a general contractor from Illinois a couple days ago, and that's a tough line of work. You got to bully, you got to push, you've got to, the president's not one to forget. I mean, he just will want to run over his enemies, one of a bulldozer, and that's the way he's been his whole life. I'm somewhat aghast at that mentality, but that's the way he operates. And he is the president of the United States, and he is taking on his enemies. I think a lot of people in my district like that because they don't want to see the president pushed around by the liberal elites.
And they feel that they have been pushed back on their heels for a number of years, the last 8 more specifically, before the president currently. You know, you said 6 months. I think I read this morning 132 days. And, of course, at the beginning of this, it has to be done. Time is of the essence. And we're talking about the acquittal that was, of course, a Senate vote. Your thoughts on the final throes of this impeachment attempt?
Well, the big drama out here was, would the Democrats be able to convince the Republican senators to call witnesses, hoping to prolong this even longer? I've been through 2 impeachments, right? They didn't call witnesses. I've been here 24 years, so impeachment is a political process. Clinton got impeached. He broke the law. Was it to a point of should we have overturned an election because of indiscretion lying before grand jury or lying in a deposition, breaking the law? I now side with Susan Collins in her comment. She says this thing has to be this guy is in cahoots and with dark forces that are going to overturn the Constitutional Republic, and is of so immediate of nature that immediate removal is required. That wasn't true for Clinton. That's not true for Trump. That's why it's a 2/3 majority. Everyone knew that this wouldn't get to 2/3. It was just a process of tearing this administration down and delaying, probably more conservative justices, maybe more tax reform, maybe more job creation. It's politics at its worst.
It's interesting you say that because I keep them so busy they can't get anything done. But still, yet we have so many other items that he highlighted in the State of the Union address that were solid successes. I mean, you've got the new job numbers out now. I'm pulling them up now to verify so I don't make sure I have the wrong numbers, because I read the ADP Moody's report yesterday, which is like 90,000 more than they had estimated. I think 261 was their new number, and I'm looking up the new jobs number now just so I can make sure we get that. But yeah, there was one item in particular I wanted to ask you about, too. On your comments a couple of moments ago about pushing back and the hyperbole, I mean, Adam Schiff, I had to go search this just to make sure, because I thought it was some internet meme, that the president will tease the Russians the prospect of selling them Alaska. He'll go to Mar-a-Lago and leave Jared Kushner to run the country in D.C. And I'm thinking, wow, is that true that he said that? And by goodness, it is.
Yeah, it is really, it's just really sad. I mean, we've fallen so far from, again, let's fight, let's have votes. I mean, what I think what most people would have hoped is that, okay, the House impeached him, the Senate acquitted him. Okay, now we can move forward. This thing's over.
Right.
And the Speaker, obviously, and the President can't let this go. And we'll see how today unfolds and next week.
It's interesting, John, that Frank just texted me. He says, you know, talking about the hate love between Democrats and Trump, that Trump knows they will always hate him. And that's interesting because, yeah, that no matter what I do, they'll still hate me and they'll still do things to me. So why try? I mean, I get that.
I don't disagree with that. I think that I was thinking about, you know, the speech, and if he would have kind of reached out his hand and say, okay, let's move forward. You know, yeah, I'm not perfect. They would have mocked him and they would have still been all over him. But who knows what would have happened had at the prayer breakfast he had done that. And you don't know, but I would have at least given him some, I think, reclaim some moral authority if at the prayer breakfast. But geez, I mean, even at prayer breakfast, the guy who's the speaker is talking about love and forgiveness and reconciliation. He stands up and says, yeah, I don't agree with that very much.
Yeah.
You can't make this up.
I've been in those uncomfortable positions too. The job number, I just got U.S. added 225,000 jobs in January, unemployment at 3.6%. This is the new numbers this morning.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing that will be highlighted now is that when the, you know, and she's not backing down, the speaker ripped up the speech. And we're trying to say, okay, what part of the speech did you really rip up? And she's now trying to give Barack Obama credit for these job numbers. So I guess the job, she doesn't believe that. But, I mean, do you, you know, what about the child born 3 weeks old? And, you know, you could talk about the anti-life position of the Democrat Party, so that she probably could have ripped that up. But all the other things, the returning soldiers from Afghanistan, the Tuskegee Airmen, I mean, she rip up that. She didn't believe any of that. I mean, that's where I think this tantrum and this display, it plays well with her base. I mean, they're probably loving her, right? But I think that the president, based upon jobs in the minority community, this choice debate with the mother and her daughter, the Tuskegee Airmen, the Hispanic Border Patrol guy, they better be very, very careful, because ripping up that speech means to those minorities, you know, we don't respect what the president has said about your contributions to our country.
John, there's some other issues I'd like to hit with you real quick.
Okay.
Coming up, the census and the prospective loss of representation, and I've worried about this since 10 years ago. Just
right.
Imagine the district gets redrawn horizontally as opposed to vertically, where we've got one congressional representative as opposed to you in Boston, two going north-south. This census and the outcomes from these numbers has me concerned about our ability to represent ourselves in D.C.
And it should. I mean, you're right. So we will lose a seat. The question is, will we lose two? But I mean, how can you, when we've lost 50,000 people who have left the state because of the administration and the taxes and the regulation of the state, those 50,000 are going someplace, and that state or states that are receiving those are going to have equal representation. So not only we better get our count right, two, we better change the policies of the state of Illinois so that we're a growing state instead of a declining state.
Will you endorse someone for the Republican Party in your district as you walk away?
No.
No endorsement?
No. I've met them all. I've called. I mean, I've received all the calls. I've talked to them. I've encouraged them. I've given them advice when asked. And I wish them well.
Yeah, and took the time to warn them about me, did you?
If they haven't talked to you, then they're not very smart.
No, and they haven't either. So, here's another item. The Iowa caucus, do you derive some type of meaning about their inability to come up with a number, a piece of software that comes from the Clinton Foundation, paid for by some interesting folks on the investment side as well? This inability to be able to run their own caucus, does that have a deeper meaning?
Well, the chatter is dysfunction, and that's the end of the Iowa caucus first in the nation event. I mean, I think Democrats are embarrassed by it. It just adds to the narrative that I mean, they can't run their own, you know, primary in their own state. And you translate that to, you really want to give them back control of governing? Now, will Biden sue? Are these people going to do a recount? This is a mess for them, and it's a self-inflicted wound that shouldn't have happened.
There was one question I had from the State of the Union address, and that was the issue of pre-existing conditions. Healthcare is going to be an important issue going into November. It may not be taking so much time and air on the space right now on the stage, but I think it will as time goes forward. Pre-existing conditions in the Republican Party, where does the Republican Party stand on this?
Well, I mean, as the president said, we want people covered and those who have pre-existing conditions. It could be very simple. The House could pass a bill that says we're protecting individuals' pre-existing conditions in health care coverage. Bang. Democrats won't do that because they still think they have leverage on that politically. It, as terrible as this sounds, this boils down to the next election. And we even in our repeal and replace bills, people don't even think we had a replacement, right? A repeal and replace of Obamacare. Even in our repeal and replace bill, we protected pre-existing conditions. But it's not what you've done, it's what people think you've done. And part of our losses was, you know, this feeling from, especially in our suburbs, that, you know, we didn't cover pre-existing conditions. So having said that, that's where we're at. But we don't control the agenda in the House of Representatives on the floor.
One interesting that the people have been listening to you and I talk, so, you know, compromise with Nancy would be like negotiating with a rattlesnake that's in your house. And that's a theme that many people are echoing. When you try to destroy me, I'll deal with it. When you mess with my family, I go to war. I don't blame the president for not shaking Pelosi's hand. Good job, Mr. Trump. I mean, we just got a ton of people that, you know, saying you can't negotiate with them because they just keep on doing what they were going to do. And I've very often found in my own personal life that people who demand respect and courtesy are the first ones to not give it. And when they rail against it more and more, they're still the ones. It's just out of personal experience and observation there. So in the time that you have and the accomplishments you hope to, I mean, how do you want to cross the finish line, John?
I mean, it's a good question. I know what I've done. I've known what I failed to do. I was down at over the weekend at Home Depot buying some things to fix a cabinet in one of the rooms of the house. And when the average person comes up to me, and two came up at Home Depot and said they were sad to see me leave, and then I represented them well. That's for me, I mean, I'm just aghast that that people continue to do that, and I'm very thankful for that because that's the reaffirmation. You know, I've cast gazillions of votes. I mean, tens of thousands of votes over the 24 years. In a constitutional republic, an elected representative, it's not a pure democracy. So we elect people to vote for us, in hopes that based upon their core values and, you know, being from the district, that most of the time they will get it right. I tell people, I think I can pull off anybody off the street in my district, put them in my seat, have them vote my card, and, you know, kind of disregard the politics. And I think 85% of the time or more, we're going to be casting the same votes. So that's what I'll take home with, and hopefully I'll get a chance to inspire the next generation of political leaders and encourage folks to stay in this, even though it's a tough business, but it's still important for people to seek elective office and try to make their communities better.
Do you think things like the Iowa caucus have a way of voter suppression and candidate suppression too, because they don't feel that they will be treated fairly?
Well, Iowa's going to have to reevaluate that system, and you know, most. I mean, the caucus system is unique, and it's a really a throwback. And most elections aren't held that way. It's two people on the ballot, make your case, and then count the votes up. So I think the Iowa caucus is at risk of being, you know, not relevant, and this might be the last time we've observed it.
It was interesting. An article published this week talks about 1988 and the Iowa way they screwed it up then, and that they say in this article they put forth the theory that Iowa stopped Paul Simon from becoming president of the United States.
Wow.
Well, that was interesting.
That's fighting words in Southern Illinois.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. John Chimkas this morning from D.C. John, any final thoughts on looking forward to this, what's going on and past acquittals, past impeachment, and to the fundamental item here of getting things done for the American population? What's in store? What do you see on the horizon?
Well, I mean, legislation still has to move. We're going to have to pass a budget. We're going to have to pass appropriation bills, hopefully keep the government open. You know, the concern is, and you've heard me say this, and I know we're short on time, you know, President Trump's really a populist. He joined the Republican Party and doesn't have all the conservative principles that I would like. I mean, not a word about debt and deficits. Was raised during the State of the Union. You know, people need to understand that, and I know there's great love for the president in Southern Illinois, but on debt and deficits, we're going in the wrong direction, even with a Republican administration.